Holt and Liz Holtzman.
And as far as Ms. Holtzman is concerned, I find great naivete, dangerous naivete, in her idea, which incidentally, she has not given us the philosophy for. And I'd like to explain that. Of voting against all defense authorizations. Now, in the Congress, no authorization, no appropriation. Or at least you should know that when you vote, and it's your vote that counts as if you were the whole body. That's the only way you can cast an intelligent vote. What she says is that she voted for resolutions, budget resolutions, which give the general framework within which authorizations and appropriations will ultimately fit. But they neither authorize nor appropriate. And therefore, there's no bailout in those votes. So I'm still waiting to hear how she philosophically justifies the fact that she has not voted for defense appropriations. Not a one of them. There must be some principle in that. Well, now she says, just a minute, she says it's to avert waste. Well, I'd like to see anything in life in which you can cut off your nose despite your face than is more accurate than averting waste in defense. So you'd have no defense? Is that an answer? Of course it isn't. And so it's naive, or we haven't heard the whole story.
There are many analysts who perceive that the minds of the voters are more conservative this year than they've been in a long time in New York, and that obviously is what D'Amato is trying to trade on. You don't see it that way?
I see the voter as being very concerned about the essentials of life, the essentials of security, and the essentials of finance. And I believe that that is the balanced outlook. And I believe that for 24 years, I have given him that. And that by training, idea, and ability, I am the best able to give him that today. And I believe that's his state of mind.
Senator, yesterday, Mr. D'Amato said that if a priority had to be set for defense spending against spending on domestic issues, social problems, and that sort of thing, he would set the priority for defense spending over the other.
Well, there we go again on promise versus performance. When the Senate was considering only a few months ago its budget for the coming fiscal year, Senator Gaylord Nelson of Wisconsin and I moved an amendment to reapportion the budget as submitted to us. The figure we fixed for defense was $153.7 billion, and that enabled us to distribute about $3 billion more in other measures, which like jobs for youth, etc., which were very, very sharply cut. That was opposed and defeated on the Senate floor. When the conferees came back, that's exactly what they had done. The figure for defense was precisely $153.7 billion. So I think that based on the record, it shows that my performance is superior to abstract ideas we get today.
Senator, on another issue, you have acknowledged that you're not going to get into a lot of heavy street campaigning because of the age and health factors in part. Do those two factors have anything to do with the way you can perform your job as senator if reelected?
Well, you know, some things have to be left to common intelligence. I'm not applying to run the 109 seconds, and I'm not applying to be a steeplejack or even a truck driver, though I imagine there's some fun in the job. I'm applying to be a senator and to use my head, and I respectfully submit that my head's pretty good.
The criteria that you use to define Mr. D'Amato as and extremism. Why is it wrong with Governor Reagan? But you support Governor Reagan. Is he also an extremist?
The Reagan candidacy, to my mind, is characterized by his wrap-up speech at the Republican convention, which I considered to be a relatively balanced presentation of what we could expect from Mr. Reagan. In addition, Mr. Reagan has been campaigning for the presidency, to my knowledge, for at least 12 years. He's gotten an enormous amount of experience in that period of time. Finally, Mr. Reagan, or Governor Reagan, was the governor of a state. He was not the supervisor of a township. A supervisor of a township where he doesn't even run the police, the fire department, or sanitation, three principal activities of any municipality. How can you remotely compare that background and experience and outlook between these two men? That's my answer. I support Governor Reagan, and I will vote for him. I've said it many times. I say it again.
Senator Javits, how are you going to, I'm not clear on, how are you going to get this point across to the voters? You're not going to be shaking hands on corners and, is it going to be perceived or is it going to be debated?
It will be in every way open to me, including shaking hands on corners. Not as many as perhaps others.
Senator,
that's all.
Senator, you said that within a few weeks you would know whether or not you're going to be able to win in this race. If you decide within a few weeks that it looks like you simply cannot win, will you withdraw?
I intend to win this. That's my best answer. I intend to win it.
You're going to campaign on street corners, and you don't have your $1 million yet. How are you going to get out to the voters? How are you going to campaign?
I have just said that I will campaign on some street corners. And I invite you right now at 12 o'clock to come to the Time Life Building and see me do it. How about that for performance? And I believe that those who are supporting me can help me to raise the money.
Right.
Now, what else do you want?
Senator, your office put out an announcement that said this was a major press conference to announce the shape and structure of the campaign. Was there anything new today? Did I miss something?
Yes. What you missed is the fact that I'm back, the Senate's out, and I'm 100% on the job and determined. That's what you missed.
Campaign people here, and you have a production crew to do a commercial, and we're sort of being props now for a commercial, aren't we?
I don't think you are. I've never seen you as props. I hope you would never accuse yourself of it. I think you're pretty important props, and I think you're pretty well accustomed to having an effort made by a candidate to utilize whatever he does for footage if he can afford to pay for it. I don't think that's anything new or sensational.
Senator, so that is the theme of this morning, that reports of your political demise are greatly exaggerated.
I think so.
Sure. Senator, King Hussein of Jordan is backing the Iraqis very closely. He has an air base devoted to the Iraqi cause. He says he may come in on the Iraqi side in view of the fact that the Central Intelligence Agency pours millions of dollars into Jordan. What is your comment on Hussein and his attitude, since we are officially neutral and want the rest of the world to do so?
Well, I think it's highly deplorable in the interests of peace in the Middle East if King Hussein government should support the Iraqi cause. And I think it's extremely deplorable that, according to reports, Jordan is harboring the Iraqi Air Force, and in that way, to some extent, helping the Iraqi cause. I have considered myself for very long a friend of King Hussein and of Jordan, and I have not given up hope, indeed the expectation, that it will participate in the peace process. And who are we in the United States to complain about deviations when we cast the vote that we did respecting Jerusalem and respecting the Israeli capital in Jerusalem in the United Nations. So these things do happen. I'm very hopeful that this is a momentary deviation. I think it's wrong, and I hope that our relations with Jordan will be such as to correct it.
Senator, you mentioned the dangerous wall over there in the Middle East. Are we nervously close to a wall? Are we going to get involved in this, man?
I hope that we are very alert and made very wary by this war. Remember, when you say nervously close, that we have already assigned military aircraft called AWACS to see that there is not some sneak air attack on Saudi Arabia. This is more than getting nervous. This is a key, critical element in the security of this country we're talking about. This country still gets 50% of its oil from OPEC sources, and Europe gets 80 or 90%, and Japan gets almost 100%. It's the incalculable damage which could be done by chaos and an inferno in the Middle East is beyond anyone's imagination. And after all, what is military strength for if not to assure your security? So while we have to proceed with the greatest restraint, so that's point one. Point two, I have distinguished myself from Governor Reagan's views on junking SALT II. I don't believe we ought to do it. I don't believe it can be confirmed now, or ratified, to give you the technical term. But I believe that it should be renegotiated from where we are, rather than by junking it. And lastly, may I say that perhaps one of the best arguments for sending me back to the Senate is to have a cool, experienced, moderate head there on defense matters. Remember, I'm the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee. That's a pretty important job, which this state would lose and couldn't possibly regain for decades. It never had it until now with me, so that I could be there and use my head in respect of war rather than be outside doing something else.
Senator?
And lastly, I'm the author of the War Powers Resolution, which for the first time in 200 years makes it very difficult for any president, and that's happened over 100 times in our history, to put us in war. It seems to me that that combination of circumstances is the best answer to your question.
Senator, are there any other public officials, other than the ones that are here, in state or out of state, who will be either endorsing you or campaigning for you or making commercials for you?
I have not as yet sought this help. I did have 9 of my fellow senators here before the primary. Naturally, having the party here officially having opted for Mr. D'Amato, it's not an easy thing you're asking me, even for me to ask, let alone for them to do. But let us have a little patience and abide the event.
Senator, where are you?
Ladies and gentlemen, I have to cut off after this question because I've got to go to this rally.
There was a lot of press speculation, sir, that you were feeling White House pressure to move aside in the Senate race, and you were, in fact, offered the several jobs at the World Bank, the United Nations. Were you offered any jobs directly?
You or must make a difference between pressure and perquisites. I doubt that President Carter could exercise any pressure over me. And I would not demean the office by doing anything but firmly and clearly state that no such offer has been made to me, nor would it be made. Frankly and honestly, I believe that anyone in authority in Washington would have too much respect for me and himself than to make me any such offer in this connection. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Well-known and widely beloved as he, but it is a ceremony that is respected and conventional, and I'm only too happy to do it. I feel I'm triply lucky in having been assigned this job. First, because I have the job. The second is that I am myself a native New Yorker, born right on Broadway, too. And it gives me the special pleasure that so was Senator Javits. And to feel that I was born the same place as he gives me a particular sense of gratification. The world has known of Senator Javits first as a very distinguished lawyer, congressman, the senator, but first and foremost of all, he is a distinguished American. If anybody has any sense of patriotism and nationality spreading right from coast to coast and up and down the country as well as being a New Yorker, it certainly would be Senator Javits. Proven, in fact, by a memory that I have when I volunteered for the services during the late war before Pearl Harbor, and I went in, and I was overage even then. I hate to admit it, but my white hair might tell you that. But I will tell you also that although Senator Javits is a little bit older than me, not much, he also volunteered and ended up in the service. And that is one of the physical proofs of being an American, putting your body and your brains and your ability where your mouth is. Now, the opponents of Senator Javits have sometimes suggested questions of age. Well, I would be offended at that myself, because here is probably one of the most able of Western statesmen, Senator Javits. And I don't think that can be denied in any country of the Western world, certainly is not denied in any other part of the United States. And I know the United States pretty well, every state in the Union. So if you pick on age, how uninformed, how trivial, how stupid a thing could be when you think that Winston Churchill and Gladstone both became prime ministers of Britain when they were in their 80s.
Right.
The great and famous World War hero Lord Mountbatten, when he was killed, was as fit and agile and active a man as one could imagine at 80. Queen Victoria was in her 80s. President Truman, I had a lovely long brisk talk with him when he was 90. So when you hear that former President Ford comes out and gives his unequivocal support to Senator Javits, that certainly should mean something. And I heard personally the other night Dr. Kissinger say that he considered Senator Javits indispensable to the United States Senate. And I don't see how any American or any New Yorker can consider any other choice, how they can hesitate when there's a man such as that about and available for us. I don't see how it could give them a moment's hesitation. And so it is the greatest pleasure and honor that I was asked to do this unnecessary but very joyful job of introducing the very, very honorable Jacob Javits, Senator of New York.
Thank you very much, Douglas. Douglas and Mary Lee are very old friends, and it's a great pleasure and a great honor to be introduced by him. He is not only well known in our country as an artist and as a businessman and as a great patriot, but he's but he's also very well known throughout the world for heroism in war and excellent works for conservation and the preservation of wildlife in peace. And I'm very pleased that he came out here as my friend to introduce me to that. Ladies and gentlemen, the occasion for this rally is that I'm resuming the campaign trail. And it has always been my custom, when I started the campaign, to start on the streets of New York. As Mr. Fairbanks has said, this is where I was born. This is my native place. I'm a New Yorker, bred and true, and I like to realize it by starting campaigns here. Now, I start in this campaign with one great asset. I have a lot of drawbacks, but I have one great asset, and that is that the people of New York don't have to be persuaded about my promises. I have performed. That's the critical thing for our country. I have performed. There isn't a town, or a county, or a city, a village, or a farm in this state where I have not done something which brought it benefit and a better life. Now let's check that out, because I don't want you to take that for granted. Let's check it out. Let us say that you have a gifted child which has found problems in the public schools because that child is probably too smart for the normal classes. I am the author of the Gifted Children's Act, which sets up special classes for such children and gives 2 million American kids a chance to really develop into geniuses. Let's say that you had a deposit in a savings bank, to be very practical. I am the author, one of the authors, there are not very many, of the law which gives you an income tax deduction for the first $200 of interest which you earn every year. Let's assume you're a pensioner and you have an interest in a private pension plan. Now, there was terrible abuse in respect of pensions, and many people lost their pensions for two reasons. One, they got fired or otherwise had to quit work toward the end of their tenure as workers. Normally, pensions are payable in 25 or 30 years of work. So if they were discharged or got ill and left the job, they lost their whole pension, even if it was the 29th year. The other reason was that the company which was giving them a pension went broke. We had a major case like that in the Studebaker Company out in Indiana, where thousands of pensioners were cut off and didn't receive their pensions anymore because their company went broke. As you know, Studebaker closed down years ago. Now this law, of which I am the author, guarantees the fact that if you have a pension, you're going to get it. And we have a government guaranteed corporation, like the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which guarantees your bank deposit, which gives you that particular guarantee. And just to bring it down close to home, I've made rather a specialty of helping local communities which have a plant or a factory which might be closing up, moving somewhere else, turning people out of work. And in a great many of those cases, it is possible to acquire the enterprise itself in order to keep workers on the job. And so, only in the last year, we have saved some 7,500 jobs in that way, by getting some $65 million in various types of government loans in order to help people acquire their own establishment. And when you add to that
the fact that I brought into the state over $1 billion in public service jobs at times of very deep unemployment. Our unemployment in this state is running at around 8%, and in places like Buffalo, New York, running at about 10%. And the fact that we have managed to find the money in government sources for housing in practically every area of the state, and for cleanups of sewers and other water enterprises. I remember, my friends, I've been at this for a quarter of a century, and I know my way around Washington now. And through the fact that seniority is so important in public life, I've acquired an unparalleled seniority for a New Yorker, which no New Yorker has had in our history. I have served longer than any other senator in the history of the state of New York. Now, these are very practical relationships. These are very practical relationships which translate into great meaning to the people of our state. And in addition to my services on the home front, for example, in 1975, when New York was on the verge of bankruptcy, I was serving with a senator named Jim Buckley. By the way, he's now running for the Senate in Connecticut. But I was serving with him, and he had very grave doubts about whether New York City should not be allowed to go into bankruptcy. And he thought that might be a good idea. Well, I didn't. I knew it would be the ruination of this city. And so alone, I, for a time, fought the battle to get New York the necessary money from the federal government on the ground that we are truly a national city in order to save us from bankers. And I was successful. And then again in 1978, with a great partner, Pat Moynihan, we managed to get New York $1.65 billion in guarantees, again, to keep it out of bankruptcy and to try to put it on some kind of a stable basis for New Yorkers for the future. And in our own city, of course, there's tremendous work to be done in terms of hospital costs and in terms of health care and in terms of the rehabilitation of neighborhoods. For example, when Robert Kennedy, of revered memory, dreamed up Bedford-Stuyvesant as a project for reforming an area which was bedeviled with poverty, he took me and then Mayor John Lindsay into partnership. And when his untoward assassination came along, the responsibility became mine, and I joined with his brother, Ted Kennedy, in carrying it out. And one of the most promising of all of the anti-poverty projects in the United States is the Bedford-Stuyvesant project, for which I've worked since those days way back when. And then in addition, my seniority in the Senate has made me the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee. I said all of these other things first before getting to foreign relations, because one of the problems I have in running for re-election is that people don't realize how much I've done for the state within the state and how much I am capable of doing in the future, because our troubles are far from over, including even the financial troubles of New York City, the reform of the welfare system and the Medicaid system and many other things which still have to be done. And so I tell you about this because it should come after accounting for myself at home before going abroad. But the fact that I'm the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee, I assure you, is very important to this state. For one, we now see that this terribly explosive situation in the Middle East can indeed produce war. Indeed, it is fair to say that if there should be a danger of a confrontation between the Soviet Union and the United States, it is far more likely to come over events in the Persian Gulf, which, as you know, washes the shores of Iran and Iraq and Saudi Arabia, than it is in the Atlantic or on the borders between Eastern and Western Europe. And it's going to take a very cool head and a lot of experience and a lot of negotiating ability to prevent that confrontation from occurring. And I'm in a unique position to help to preserve the peace as the senior member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, through which all of these affairs actually flow. And if that isn't enough, my party, and I'm far from the most conservative member of my party, as you all know, my party made me the chief of its subcommittee to deal with the domestic economy of the United States. And since 1977, the party has been coming out with economic programs, of which this subcommittee, of which I chair, has authored. And it is this work which resulted in Reagan's proposal for a 10% individual tax cut and for a tax cut for the American industrial machine in order to, what he calls, and it's a good word, reindustrialize America. In other words, modernize and make more competitive our industrial processes. We are shamefully behind. We, the great seller in the world, are way behind many, many other countries, including Italy and Britain, of all people, let alone Japan and Germany, in our efficiency in production. And we are being beaten greatly in the competition for export sales for that reason. And we are, in New York, the principal exporting state in the United States. And an enormous amount of our prosperity or lack of it is tied up with that kind of a situation. And there again, I can be of enormous help to my state and of enormous help to peace in the world. And finally, for over 200 years, presidents were able to put us in war. This goes way back to Thomas Jefferson's day and the war on the Barbary pirates, who were pirates in the Mediterranean, way back in the late 18th century. And no technique had been developed to deal with that problem. When we ran into the Vietnam War and the activities of President Johnson,